fandom?
Well, I'm glad you asked. Fandom is your obsession with TV, movies, comics, and books.
Fandom is debating whether or not Goku or Superman would win in a fight. Clearly, it's Batman.
Fandom is about liking things. Join us weekly on Fandom as we talk about all of that and more. Subscribe at fandompodcast.com.
As far back as I can remember, I always wanted to be a...
the owner of a comic book store.
Trust me, true believer.
Well, Jagger and me, we had a running contest to see who had the most comic books in the world.
Whatever, my escape was comic books.
Net profit to me, -$59.
I love the comics because of the brightness displayed by the fellows who drew them. They remain with me always. And when comic books first came into being, it drew me to them.
Tales from the Comic Shop.
Hey, and welcome to Tales from the Comic Shop. I'm your host, Joe, and today I'm joined by Eddie D'Angelini. How you doing this week, Eddie?
I'm doing good, thank you. Just like Joe said, I'm Eddie D'Angelini. I am the co-owner, co-manager of Heidi Hill Comics and the creator, writer, artist of the comic strip Collectors.
And how was Heidi Hill Comics this week, Eddie?
Well, I'd love to say that it was wonderful and we made a boatload of money. But the truth is, shops as opposed to all other businesses right now are still struggling. It's inevitable. Most places can only open to certain percentage of capacity. A lot of businesses only have like a certain percentage of returning customers. So it's still kind of rough.
Yeah. I know you were saying before the show, there's even the potential that LA County might close down again with this latest boom of COVID cases. I hope that that's not the case. And just still hoping you guys get a good bounce back here coming in the future because you deserve it.
Well, no one's actually said that's going to happen or that it could happen, at least no one in a position of power. But it's hard to think that it's not a possibility. Truth is, a lot of other states have started to do some closures, like in Florida and Texas, that you know they close bars or other places where people gather socially. And we've had a lot of cases here in LA County popping up, and it might affect us. It might not. I don't know. But truth is, we just, you know, like any business, you have to be prepared for the worst. Hope for the best and prepare for the worst.
Absolutely. Let's hop into some comic news this week. This week we saw the first premiere issue of Death Metal, the penultimate Scott Snyder, Greg Capullo, DC book.
So this one's on you because you said you read it. So I'm going to ask you what you thought of it.
I did read it. And I've got a lot to say about it. So when Metal came out, I was kind of on the fence about it. I was getting the main books, but I wasn't going to do the tie-ins. And then the Batman Who Laughs one-shot came out. That's one of the best single issues of comics in the last 4 or 5 years, in my opinion. It's just a really excellent, excellent book. It's Scott Snyder at his best. You know, Metal was very hard to follow if you were not an expert on all things DC, in particular all things DC during the time that Snyder has been there.
I got to admit, that's why I didn't read it.
Yeah,
I felt
overwhelmed
with the amount of knowledge you got to have going in.
Like, I haven't read it in 3 years since it came out, or 2.5 years or whatever, since it ended. And I'm not even 100% that I can exactly explain what happened coherently. I mean, the gist was, I remember the DC universe was sinking into the dark universe, and there was a laser that they had to shoot at something for some reason. And then Detective Chimp shows up, Batman comes back with Wonder Woman and Superman wearing armor made out of nth metal that lets them, or no, it's not made out of nth metal. It's made out of 10th metal, I think, I believe is what it was called. And they stop the Batman Who Laughs and save the universe. But in the process, they break the source wall, which led to a whole new set of problems. And it's all really just kind of leading up to the fact that they're going to do another crisis. Because that's what DC does. DC does books, and then they put out a crisis, and then they restart.
I don't know. I think, I think DC is a crisis.
I love the new 52 Batman run. It's incredibly well done. Yes, it does kind of fizzle out. Mr. Bloom did not live up to the hype, but it's the thing is like the 30 books before you get into that Mr. Bloom run or whatever it was, 40 books are so good that it's almost impossible for that like storyline to live up to what came before it. You start off with Court of Owls, which is, you know, a seminal Batman run at this point. Then you go straight into Year Zero, which is also just an awesome story, standing alone. Like the fact that that kind of happens back to back with Death in the Family, or maybe I have it backwards. Does Death in the Family come next? I don't know off the top of my head, but
I can't remember either without Googling
those,
it.
Those three storylines just being all in a row is so insanely creative. And then the fact you throw in Greg Capullo's art, which is just, I mean, I'm getting ASMR tingles just talking about how good those three runs are.
That should be DC's new tagline. We'll make you tingle.
But yeah, so Metal, I mean, it was all right. And so I wasn't super stoked because I read the Justice League that followed it up about the Source Wall, and then I kind of left it because I was just kind of like, meh, okay, this is, you know, whatever. And so I'm kind of jumping into Death Metal a little maybe behind the eight ball. And I wasn't going to buy the tie-ins for Death Metal because, honestly, I love Morrison. Morrison, his Batman Inc. is another one of my favorite Batman stories. Damian Wayne is my favorite Robin. And in particular, when Grant Morrison created Damian and did that run from 655 through Batman Inc., it's another masterclass in storytelling, in my opinion. You know, I love Morrison's Green Lantern run. I mean, who doesn't like a Green Lantern that's also a volcano? I love Rock of Ages, just phenomenal. But The Wild Hunt is one of the few books where while I was reading it, I said out loud, oh no, don't do this. And for some reason, Morrison decided to bring in Detective Chimp into Metal. Oh, and I still don't fully understand why he was brought in besides the fact that his initials are DC. The last page in The Wild Hunt is the Animal Justice League coming to help save the day. And it's just like, it's very cringy. It's like they might as well have just brought in a Underdog. So yeah, but so I read Death Metal today. I just finally got around to reading Death Metal 1 today. And I know it came out last week, but I'm going to buy all the tie-ins because I'm intrigued. It starts off very strong issue. Yeah. I'm not going to do any spoilers, but I'm just going to say like, based off the strength of the first issue, next Wednesday when I go back into my LCS to pick up my pull, I'm going to ask them to add all the tie-ins for Death Metal to it. So.
So here's a question for you, which is more a behind-the-counter retailer question regarding Death Metal. Do you know where your shop stands on the new DC distribution and if they are signed up?
So my shop has a very different opinion from you guys, and they are very interested, or they're very happy about this. And they're unhappy about the weekend. The time frame sucks. No one's debating that. But they have a very good relationship with Midtown. They consider Midtown to be a friend, not a competitor. This is their words.
Okay.
And the reason for that is because they get all their missed issues from Midtown. So if, say, Diamond screws up or they screw up and forget to order something for me, their relationship with Midtown is they call them directly and Midtown gets them the books they need.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Yes. And so because of that, they have no problem with Midtown being in charge of the distribution. And they think, you know, they're a smaller shop. And so Diamond's hard on them. I understand why they have issues with Diamond. And so they are happy to see the Diamond monopoly being broken. It's a very different take than what we've been having on this show.
Yeah, it's actually the first time I've heard of a shop who is very pro the situation.
Well, and I didn't they are, to get they're very, you know, I mean, there's def they understand the negatives and they're very, you know, he was telling me, you know, he has to, or, you know, the fact he has to manually order everything is, you know, not great. And the fact that they only gave them a weekend to switch is, you know, obviously bad. But like, as far as like the big politics that we've been talking about, yeah, they are, they're on board with this.
Okay. And this is the reason why I bring this up. Death Metal number one is the last, as far as that title goes, that's the last issue of that series that is going to be coming from Diamond. So Death Metal two is going to be coming from one of the two new distributors. So if you went to your shop and you picked up Death Metal number one, that shop got it through Diamond. Now, depending on how they feel about the whole distribution model thing with DC's two new distributors, they may or may not have issue number two when you go back to continue with the series. And even if your shop is very pro the new distributors and pro DC with everything going on, there also is, like what you mentioned, that very small window that they gave shops to switch over and get set up. And some of them may not have actually had enough time or made that window. And even if they are very pro DC and the new distributors, they might have a lag time of getting, not getting that second issue or some other DC books that come out in very first with the new distributors, you know, and even the new distributors themselves may encounter problems, mistakes, or other things that keep shops from getting those first few books on time before they kind of get in the swing of things and, you know, learn which shops are where and who orders what and make sure everybody gets everything on time the way they should, because it's all new to them and it's like a big step. So I don't know if there's going to be any missteps or hiccups in that process getting started. That's my worry, that there might be some hiccups along the way and I might not get books, even though I've, you know, got those orders in. And I don't know how that's obviously it's going to reflect on me when customers come in and they say, hey, where's Death Metal number two? And I've got a hem and haw about why I don't have it. So that's kind of like the dividing line, Death Metal number one and Death Metal number two. That's literally where the switch is happening.
Here's another interesting thing about Death Metal. There's no checklist for it. So normally when Marvel or DC does a big event,
yes,
we all know there's a checklist.
Yeah. Death Metal, all the tie-ins.
Yeah. There's no checklist because they don't know what the tie-ins are going to be yet. They're waiting to see how Death Metal 1 and 2 sell first. And then I believe in August, they will start doing the tie-ins based on the sales of Death Metal 1 and 2, which is a very
interesting.
I'm a little nervous about that because that it's the event book of the summer for them.
Also, you got to consider that a lot of release dates are all screwed up and out the window. And Marvel finally figured out come July their new release schedule. But it's all kind of just new, really, as far as what's coming out when. And it's hard for me, too, because when people come into the shop and they say, wait, isn't such and such out? When does that come out? And I got to go, and I got to go look it up. Because, for instance, Marvel's big event that they're going to be starting, Empire, that should have already come out and started. But obviously the closures and Diamond closing and everything like that threw everything off. So I wonder if that might be playing a part with DC as far as not knowing the release schedules for some of the tie-ins and not having a checklist.
But so, yeah, you know, I mean, regardless of the behind the scenes stuff and the behind the counter stuff, I thought the story was very intriguing. I'm very curious to see where they're going to go with it. It's a whole new kind of universe. The Batman Who Laughs has kind of reshaped the DC universe into his own universe. And Wonder Woman's kind of the last person standing. And she doesn't really have a fleshed out plan, but it seems very, very potentially interesting. So earlier I said that Death Metal, that the tie-ins were going to be based on sales. That was conjecture on my part. What has actually been said is that Snyder has said that further tie-ins and crossovers will be added to the event depending on reader response to opening issues of the series this summer. So I'm guess that's my conjecture is that means that sales will decide how many tie-ins there will be. There are already tie-ins scheduled. They don't know how many more there will be. So I find that a very interesting way to tell a story. All right, Eddie. So also this week, we had news that Negan will be getting a one-shot. Negan from The Walking Dead, famously played by Jeffrey Dean Morgan on the show, will be back. So what's the news there?
Well, next week, they're going to be coming out with that one-shot. And what's kind of nice about this is this one-shot coming out next week is going to be free to all comic shops. And this is Robert Kirkman kind of saying, thank you, and we're here to support you to all the comic shops. It's basically him and Skybound. And they've done this before. When Robert Kirkman's other series, Die, 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 came out, the number ones came to all shops for free. And we found out about this a week or two or so before the book was coming out, because we didn't order any of this. We didn't know anything about it. And they based the amount that they sent to each shop on previous orders of other Skybound Robert Kirkman books. So they're doing the same with this. Shops are getting certain number of copies based on your order of the final issue of Walking Dead 193. And you're getting these books for free. And on top of that, you're getting variants for this book. Every shop is going to be getting one gold cover variant of Negan Lives and two silver cover variants. And as of this recording, the silver cover is going for about $100 on eBay. And the gold one is going for about $400. So, you know, thank you, Robert Kirkman. You're basically sending us free money, which is kind of nice. And like I said, that's his way of saying, hey, I know you shops have had a really hard time, really tough time, and you're still having a tough time. Let us do a little something for you. So it's greatly appreciated. So in a week, next week, July 1st, where there's going to be very few books coming out, period, this is going to be the one standout book that I think all shops are just going to do amazing on. And this isn't the first time, like I said, that Robert Kirkman has done stuff for shops specifically. This guy, he loves shops. He's there for retailers. He's always supporting them. He's actually come into my shop a couple times and bought up a bunch of stuff. And, you know, because I guess the Skybound offices are not that close to my shop, but he must had business elsewhere in the neighborhood, and he's come in a couple of times. But he does other things for retailers as well, like in San Diego Comic-Con. Every year he throws a retailer breakfast on the weekend, usually Saturday or Sunday. And he will have just a huge spread of food for all the retailers coming. And usually, I mean, like just amazingly just delicious breakfast food. Yeah. Omelets, scrambled eggs, hash browns, French toast, fresh orange juice, and an open bar if you want to start early, because it is San Diego. And usually on those retailer breakfasts, he will talk to all the retailers and kind of give them a heads up about what Skybound is doing in the coming year and let them know what to expect from them and what they think is going to be hot and what new titles that they're putting out. And what's also nice too is that you always leave those retailer breakfasts with a goodie bag from Skybound. And just this last San Diego last year, that goodie bag was a yellow label CGC signed copies 9.8 of the final issue of Walking Dead 193, and also copies of the San Diego Comic-Con variant for 193, which I mean is fantastic. And I guarantee you, and myself included, by the time I was out of that room, I was already putting those on eBay and making good money off of it. And he totally expects that. He's like, man, make your money, survive, do what you guys got to do. We're here to help you. So that's what he's doing this coming week. He's helping out the shops by giving us these free copies of this newest book. And it's probably going to be, in a very slow week, going to be the one book that all shops do really well with and have people come in looking for. So looking forward to that. And I'm definitely looking forward to selling those gold and silver variants for sure. So thank you, Robert Kirkman. Thank you, Skybound.
So your strategy is going to be to flip the books, the gold and silver books, raw and not CGC them?
Yeah, because if I honestly, I think striking while it's hot is the way to go. Obviously, if shops could get them early enough and wanted to pay for the to expedite grading through CGC, maybe they might want to take the risk that they can make more. But really, honestly, by the time you get it back, how much is that book going to drop? Because I can guarantee you, like right now, that gold variant is pre-selling for about $400 to $450. By the time I get my books, which is going to be Tuesday, the day before Wednesday, by the time I get my books on that Tuesday and I look up the prices, I can guarantee you they're going to probably start dropping at that point, because there are the few retailers who are brave enough to start pre-selling those books right away now and make the most. And then there are the retailers like myself who prefer to wait until I have the books in hand. I got to worry about two things. One, will I get shorted those books when I've already sold them for, you know, a total of $500, $600? And then now I'm stuck having to return that money and think that maybe I might not, if I call in those books as shortages, will I even get replacement copies? Maybe, maybe not. I got to worry about that. And then I got to also worry that if I'm selling them under the premise that they're going to be, you know, near mint 9.2, 9.4, 9, whatever, am I going to get them in that condition or are they going to come damaged? Because that's a concern any retailer has got to worry about when they're pre-selling a hot book, especially a variant. Am I going to get shorted or are they going to come damaged? And then I got to face the music with the person who pre-ordered for however much money. So I prefer to have the book in hand that Tuesday morning when I pick up the books, and then deal with if there's a possible price drop then and sell it for what I can. And like I said, they were free. So it's literally free money. So if the book drops down to say 200 from 400, I can't be that upset, because if I turned around that same day on a Tuesday and sold it for 200, I paid nothing for the book. So I can't be that upset. I'll tell you a horror story. This was before Diamond closed. I know a person who pre-sold several copies of that 1 in 25 variant with Punchline for Batman 92. Uh-huh. And then Diamond closed, those orders got canceled, and he suddenly had to refund all of those people who pre-ordered from him.
Yeah.
So I don't want to be in that kind of situation. I'd rather just avoid that, maybe run the risk of making a little less when I get the book in hand, but know that I have it.
Absolutely. So on a book like The Punchline, I know yours came damaged. What happens there? How does that work?
Well, they came slightly damaged. You saw the pictures, so you know what I'm talking about. They were all spoken for by regular customers at that time. The ones that were acceptable, I sold for what the regular going price was. And the ones that I thought were less than acceptable, I basically gave a price break to the regulars that bought it. There, and I just got to distinguish between which customers get which books, because I know that there are certain ones, certain customers that are very particular. They will go and look at every little corner, every little spine. I know that those people want the best possible copy. And then I know that there are the other customers. Yeah, you know what? If I give them a little bit of a price break, they don't mind that it has a little bit of a ding here, a little bit of scuff there. And the damage that were on about half of the books that I got were the corners of the spines were scuffed. And they were scuffed enough to where they were pretty visible and kind of not that great looking. But overall, the book was not in any way trashed. It just had those little bit of a defect on the corners, enough to where I thought I'm not going to be able to sell this for what the top going rate for this variant is. And I should obviously disclose to my customers what's up and why I'm pricing it the way I am.
All right. Well, moving on to more prevalent news. There has been a movement in the comic industry over the last couple weeks of newer creators coming forward to talk about their experience trying to break into the industry or starting at these comic companies, and how they have been abused by more established creators that are in a position of power. While Eddie and I, both being white males, are not going to comment on this because we don't feel it's our place, we have to bring you this news because it's a big deal and it requires that we at least touch on it. Last week, we briefly talked about Warren Ellis, the accusations against him. And Warren Ellis, for those who don't know, he created a book called Transmetropolitan, among many others. Right now, he's working on another book called, or he's in the, they're released, DC's in the process of releasing the last few issues of a book that he worked on called Batman's Grave. But he's about as big of a name in the industry as you can find.
For like the last two or three decades.
Yes. This week, accusations came about co-creator of Spider-Gwen, Jason Latour, and his behavior towards a young creator at her first con that drove her away from the industry, unfortunately.
Can I say something that really is really, really bothers me so much? And, you know, as we're not here to speak for somebody on their behalf or anything like that, but the idea that any creator coming into the industry is basically kind of chased away by the actions of someone above them, which is so inappropriate, their actions being so inappropriate and so in a way that makes them not just feel uncomfortable, but even just in danger, that we've lost somebody that could have been just a powerhouse talent, or at the very least, someone that contributed great stories to a character that we love. And basically that voice,
great art.
Yes, or great art. That voice is now gone and not coming back because of the actions of somebody above them who they think they can do pretty much whatever they want because of their position of power.
You're absolutely right. The fact that there's this abuse of power, and it's so prevalent, not just media, but in every aspect of the American experience, or the world experience. It's not just even a uniquely American problem. Just the abuse of power by people in authority to get something from these people in order to, in the hopes that it won't, not, it's, they're not even trying to further their careers. They're just hoping these people won't cripple their careers. And so they acquiesce, or they, at worst, they acquiesce, and at best, they fend them. They're forced to fend these people off for, in some cases, years and years. Another story that really bothered me were the accusations against Scott Alley, who was an editor at Dark Horse. They fired him for his behavior finally, but the accusations against him, he worked on huge books, Hellboy, Umbrella Academy. And I mean, what he's accused of is just so despicable. And the fact that no one from HR at Dark Horse responded to that is just, I mean, I want to say it's unbelievable to me, but there's so many of these stories coming forward every day that, like, it's just, it's egregious, and it's something we as an industry have to fix. It's not acceptable.
Not at all. And for people who would say, well, who are you, two white males, to talk about this? You know, why can't we get voices of people who are actual victims? Well, I'm not going to name any names, but I do know somebody who just today said on Facebook that they had an encounter with this Scott Alley character, and was basically kind of, for lack of a better term, sexually assaulted by him. And the person that's making this accusation against Scott Alley is a white male. So to say that it is a thing of gender where a certain group of people shouldn't speak out about it and should just listen, well, yes, I absolutely agree, because the majority of these stories are coming from women, and we should listen. We should not discount the fact that it can, anybody can be a victim of this. It's not just women, but anyone who is in a position of being lower than. And that is what is so unacceptable, that you as a person, whether you are a male, female, black, white, straight, gay, anything, if you go to work for a company, any company, and you are at the lowest rung, and the people above you think that they can take advantage of you in any way, whether it's physical abuse, sexual abuse, mental abuse, anything, the fact that they think that they could do that to you because you are at a lower rung and you are willing to take anything that they give you because you are either afraid of any kind of repercussion or afraid of losing your job, afraid of not getting ahead, that is just, it's inhuman and it's unacceptable in any form whatsoever, regardless of what gender or color or sexuality that either side is. It is a inhumane thing to do to another human being, period. And anybody who has been abused not only should be listened, but the people who are entrusted to listen to these people have a responsibility to do something to dismantle this system that causes this. I mean, you hear, I've heard all my life about rumors of the casting couch in the entertainment industry, in the film industry, and TV industry. And granted, I have no personal experience with this or don't know anybody who suffered anything to this extent, but we've always just accepted that it's just a natural part of the business, that it exists. And you think of it in industries like that, or politics, something where there is just extreme wealth and power that is being wielded by a small group. And it's very disheartening to see that also happening in the comic book industry, because it's an industry where, except for maybe a very rarefied few, people aren't making a lot of money. People are not getting filthy rich the way a politician or a movie producer are getting filthy rich. It's an industry where it's always been thought of as like a very close-knit family, you know, a very small group of people who are like almost like an artist commune, who are doing great stuff because they believe in what they're doing and they believe in the art. And yes, it is a business and it will be run like a business. Of course, I don't fault, you know, the larger publishers for running their business like a business, but it's always been seen as something to where the people who work for Marvel or the people who work for DC or Dark Horse, whatever, these people are like a family, and that you treat everybody within that family with the same amount of respect, even if it's the person that comes into the office to clean the toilets, that they're treated with the same kind of family respect as you would someone who is writing or drawing the hot series at the publisher. And it's so disheartening to see that It's not really like that. That the abuses that you see in other industries are happening in this one. And it's so upsetting because for someone who is a retailer and also a creator and has met and, you know, gone out to have a drink, you know, in the bars in San Diego with some of these people who are publishers or creators or writers or whatever, you kind of think of being like just like a cool clique, a cool group. And you don't think of it as a class system where the people at the low rung are treated like peons by the people on top who have all the wealth and all the power. And unfortunately, we're beginning to see that it is. And it's just so disheartening.
Well, I think the important thing to remember, Eddie, is there are still good people in the industry higher up.
Yes, I'm certainly not saying
that. I want to give a shout out to Gail Simone. She tweeted out today about some of the problems mm-hmm. that I found very interesting. She talked about how these people who are doing these things will reach out to her and try, like, people that she doesn't know, that she doesn't talk to, will reach out to her and try and get her
speak out on,
you know,
their behalf.
Speak for them and yeah. on their behalf, because she's the woman liberal mouthpiece for the comic industry. Yeah. And it's just, that's another example of them just being completely unfair. And, you know, she basically said flat out, you know, they can go fuck themselves. She will not be their port in the storm. And, you know, good for her.
Good for Gail. And
there's a little irony here in that she also said, if you're a journalist and you have never done a story about women in fandom being harassed, despite all this stuff you see every day, it feels a little odd that it's suddenly a priority. I agree with that, which is why one of the reasons that I paused on doing this. But to be fair, this is our 11th episode, so we haven't had that many opportunities, and we will try to be good allies going forward, I promise, and talk about this until it is no longer a problem.
I liken it to people who say, well, like everything that's going on right now in the world with police brutality. People want to say that not all cops are bad. And you know what? I have to believe that not all cops are people who are going to, you know, beat up suspects and do kind of horrible things and shoot people in the back and that kind of stuff. But until the good cops speak out against the bad ones, the system will never change, because it has to change from the inside, not from the outside. We can pressure, like what's happening in the streets with all the protests, we can pressure them to make the change, but the change is going to come from the people on the inside who finally step up, because not just because they're being pressured to by the public, but because it's the right thing to do. And unfortunately, I think it might be the same with the comic industry, that, yeah, I'm sure there's plenty more good publishers and editors and people out there in the industry than there are bad. But those people need to step up and stop defending the bad ones. They need to do what they have to do to just get rid of those people, period. Otherwise, it's not going to change.
Couldn't agree more, Eddie.
Yeah, otherwise, it's not going to change. You have to change the system.
Absolutely. So I think the takeaway here is, you know, be a good ally. If you see something, say something, and really listen to the victims. And, you know, that's...
And if you ever make your way up into the comic book industry,
advocate for change.
Remember the golden rule. The golden rule being, with great power comes great responsibility. Be responsible. Be responsible for yourself, your actions, and the people around you.
Absolutely. So we're going to close out by doing a cool stuff and a pick for reading this week. So my cool stuff this week is it's a CBCS Yellow, which we very, very disparaged last week on the show.
Hold up. A CBCS Yellow, for refresh our memories, means what exactly?
It means it was a witness signature, a CBCS witness. And
I'm sorry to keep interrupting you, Joe. I'm trying to clarify. So then what is the red label? It's just
Red label is a verified.
Okay, that was not witnessed.
Yes.
Okay.
And but the reason that the witness for CBCS is less ideal than for CGC, we talked about extensively last week. But
yeah, we did. I remember that now.
It's because of the fact that their process for vetting witnesses is very, very different.
Yeah, it's not as strict. So you've got better process when it comes to CGC yellow label. Yeah.
But this one was one that I couldn't pass up on because it is it's a double signed. It's signed by Murat Michaels and Stanley Art Germ Lau, and it is the 2019 Pray for the Sinner NYCC Rough Cut Edition. And it has to be CBCS because that's the only way you could get them. So I had no choice on that.
Yeah.
But I was not going to pass up on the Art Germ signature. This cover is absolutely gorgeous. It's a pen sketch cover. It's individually numbered, number 31 of only 200. Yeah, I honestly have never read Pray for the Sinner, but I love Art Germ, and I'm very happy to have his signature on this beautiful cover.
And you're going to post a picture of it on our socials so we can all see it?
Yes, we will be posting pictures, as always, of the cool stuff on Facebook, Twitter, at comic_tales, and also on Instagram. So make sure you're checking out the social media. You know, talk to us, give us a like, give us a comment. We'd love to hear from you guys. Eddie, what is your cool stuff?
So my cool thing this week is a book that I just got this past Wednesday. And it was a little bit of a harrowing situation getting it because I thought this book was going to get to me on a Thursday. And I am home, working from home on Thursdays, so I had it sent to my home address. But when I checked the tracking, it showed it was coming on Thursday, but then it showed it was coming on Wednesday. Wednesday, I am at the shop all day, and I was starting to fret. Because obviously the mailman was going to leave it on my porch. And I've had packages stolen from my porch before, so I was a bit nervous. So I actually had a neighbor friend of mine who gets home earlier than I do go to my porch and get it just so I knew it was safe. And what is it, you may ask? It is a CGC copy of Tales of Suspense 52. Which is the first appearance of Black Widow.
And the Natasha Romanoff Black Widow, not the original Black Widow, correct?
Correct, yes. The Black Widow that we all know and love from the Marvel movies. Yeah, the original Natasha Black Widow. And it's a lower grade. It's a 2.5, but it is a nice CGC copy. It presents well. And it replaces the raw copy I have, which looks nicer, but unfortunately has a clipped coupon on the back cover.
Ah.
So, which I didn't notice. I got it for a great price, but I didn't notice that until after I got it home.
Yeah, so, that's always rough. Yeah, that's the worst when you don't notice until after you get home.
Yeah, but I can't be upset because I got it for practically nothing. But anyway, this graded copy will now replace that one.
That's awesome, Eddie. Congratulations. Always nice to hear about someone getting a silver Marvel key of that magnitude. So what you been reading, Eddie? You got a pick for our listeners this week?
I do have a cool pick this week. It's a book that I read a couple nights ago, and it actually came out not this week, but the previous week. It is a book called Against Hope by Victor Santos, and it was released as a original graphic novel hardcover. And it is the story. It was the art that drew me in and made me want to read it. The art is, the only way I can describe it is, it is a cross between Frank Miller from his Sin City period and Marcos Martin. So if you're not familiar with Marcos Martin, he did Daredevil for a while. And then before that, he was on Amazing Spider-Man, where his art has an almost kind of nostalgic Silver Age look to it, but still looking modern. So if you can imagine a cross between Marcos Martín and Frank Miller Sin City period, that's what this art looks like. And it's really, really amazing. And it draws you in, especially with the colors. It is a story about a young girl who she's a woman now in the story in present day. But as a young girl, she was attacked and her boyfriend killed by a younger brother of a white supremacist. And as she goes into adulthood, now as an adult, she decides she's getting revenge on this group of white supremacist neo-Nazis. And she pretty much kind of like in a bit like Frank Miller's Sin City, she just plows through them. And it is just, it's a bit gory, a bit bloody, but it's so satisfying watching this. And she's a woman of color. They're not really clear exactly what, but I'm guessing from reading it that she is Hispanic. But she is just plowing through these white supremacists and just laying them out like crazy. Because in the beginning, they show when she's a young girl and her boyfriend is killed. She's captured by these neo-Nazis, and they bring her to like a big empty farm area somewhere in the woods, and are now they let her go without her shoes, and they are now hunting her down, and like an animal. But she manages to get away, and then as an adult, she tracks them all down, kind of like Magneto, tracking down Nazis, and just slaughters them. So it is just satisfying to watch her go through all these neo-Nazi skinheads, and it's a fun read. It skips around in time from her as a child to her as an adult to her as a teenager. But it all comes back around in the end, telling the story about these people and the people that she goes up against. And I highly recommend it. It's just a lot of fun to read, and the art is beautiful, and it really draws you in. It's Against Hope.
Who's the creators?
So it's done by one creator who writes and draws the book, and his name is Victor Santos. And other title I know him from is an image book that he does with writer Frank Barbieri called Violent Love, which also has his amazing art in it as well, similar to this book. So I highly recommend this. It's a fun read. It is, if you're a fan of Frank Miller's Sin City, you'll definitely love it. But it's just a fun read all around. And it's really the way the story winds through this main character's life from her childhood to teenage years, back and forth to adulthood and everything. And it's a fun read from beginning to end. And I highly recommend it. It's called Against Hope.
Okay. I'm intrigued. I'm definitely going to take a look for it. So my pick this week was a little hard to decide. I've been kind of back and forth. I did a lot of reading this week. It's a very good read. The 80th anniversary of Joker was 2 weeks ago, I believe.
Yeah, it came out.
Him and Catwoman.
It came out 2 weeks ago.
They staggered him and Catwoman on back-to-back weeks because they both premiered in Batman number one. So they did the 80th anniversary Joker 2 weeks ago. Overall, it was a very good read. It holds up with Tech 1000 and Robin 80 years. I haven't gotten to Catwoman 80 years yet. I quite enjoyed it. The origin of Punchline is in there. I gotta say, I'm not writing her off yet, but from what I've seen so far of Punchline, I'm struggling to get traction with her as a character. She seems kind of just like a sadist. She's not fun like Harley was. I mean, what was interesting and for me gave me like a lot of initial enjoyment with Harley in the animated series was she was a fun juxtaposition to Mark Hamill's like grumpy,
yeah,
crazy, insane Joker. I mean, she's crazy and she's insane, but she was kind of like fun. She was different than Joker is. Whereas Punchline is just like, she's just a sadist. Like I think I've read all her appearances, and every single line she has is just about how she's either going to poison a bunch of people or cut guys up and wear their skin. It's just, she hasn't had a chance. I mean, she really hasn't had a chance yet. She hasn't had her own issue where we can really see her stretch her legs and see if there's more to this character. But like, honestly, she's just kind of a Hannibal Lecter ripoff.
So, does her origin story in that Joker 80th anniversary book kind of at all kind of flesh that out a bit as to why she's like that?
No, it's literally just her committing her first murder.
Okay.
I don't even know that it's her first murder, but it's an 8-page story. It's been 2 weeks, I guess. So spoilers, I'm going to give you 5 seconds to fast forward or pause the podcast, but 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. So it's like an 8-page story. And it's basically this girl. It starts off, it doesn't tell you that it's Punchline. It's this girl and she's in a dorm room and she's, you know, it's Punchline, but there's an administrator in her dorm room telling her she's going to be suspended because she has been going around wearing a Joker shirt at a college where the Joker committed a mass murder where he released Joker gas. And it's in Gotham. So obviously, you know, I mean, it's a very controversial thing for her to do, to go around campus wearing this Joker shirt. And there's something about, like, on campus, there's an event where people were supposed to wear their favorite superhero's shirt to represent, support the superheroes or whatever. And she went in a Joker shirt. And as the story goes along, the guy starts kind of fading and like making less sense because he's been poisoned, you find out. And then the Joker comes out of a closet and goes, good job. And she puts on her makeup. And that's kind of the origin of Punchline. And it's just very one-dimensional. Go ahead.
Do you think people realized that the origin of Punchline was in that book? Because I had a lot of people in my shop who had no clue.
Yeah, no, they did not do a good job of promoting that, which I was fine with, considering how hard it was to get Batman 92 and Hell Arisen number 3 and 89? Batman 89, I believe, was the first cameo.
Yeah.
You know, I had no issue with, I mean, it seems really stupid I guess they don't want to take away from the Joker. I don't know. I don't understand that marketing strategy at all.
A lot of people didn't know that that story was in there. And I still have copies of that Joker book left. And I think I would have sold through all of them if people knew the day it came out that it was Punchline. Yeah.
Yeah, on top of that, so far what we've seen from Punchline is one phone call in Batman 89. Mm-hmm. Her first appearance is Hell Arisen, but I don't even know how you can call it a first appearance because she doesn't even have a line in that book. She just stands there holding a knife to some guy's throat. And then Joker tells her to like kick rocks, and that's the last you see of her. And then in 92, there's a bit more, but it's just her threatening to hurt people and being kind of Hannibal Lectery about it. So, you know, we don't know who this character is, and I'm not passing judgment, but if she's just a female version of Hannibal Lecter cosplaying as the Joker, I do not see that having the same staying power as Harley Quinn has had.
You might be right, which doesn't bode well for me because I have a stack of Batman 92 still left.
Oh no. that's crazy too. Cause that book, I mean, I don't know. I think they really, that book was so anticipated for that Art Germ cover.
Yeah.
By having to push it back so far, that really kind of probably screwed that up.
It did, but like I said, the variant was easy to sell. First day, no problem. That's why I was upset. I got 6 copies of that 1 in 25 variant, and I was upset that they came slightly damaged because they were the whole reason why I ordered so many of 92, because I knew I wasn't going to sell through all the 92 that I ordered. And now, you know, I made what I could off of those variants, and now I'm stuck with all those 92s. So honestly, we should have a Batman 92 giveaway on our podcast.
Hey, that's not a terrible idea.
We'll think of a way we can give
them away. I'll tell you what, everybody call Eddie at the shop and,
no, I'm just and give me your credit card and I will send you copies.
No stealing from the listeners, Eddie. All right. Well, I think that's going to wrap things up for us this week. As always, Eddie, thank you for your expertise. We all appreciate it. And we will be back next week with more Tales from the Comic Shop. Good night.
Good night. Thanks for listening.
This show is part of the Geek Nerd Network.
Geek Nerd Network.
Find more shows like it at geeknerdnetwork.com.
This is Jen.